Hey, this is Sean McNabb from Lynch Mob and Resurrection Kings, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott.
And Richie.
2 weeks in a row of both of us in the studio. It's like a freaking miracle, isn't it?
It is. It is my life.
It's a New Year's miracle.
No.
Yeah, but anyways, great show this week. And Richie has been able to once again pull off one of his things and deliver us a great interview this week with...
Sean McNabb.
Very nice interview. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. But I think before we do that... Why don't we dive in and do a little bit of a track of the week? And, of course, you know, the brand new Primal Fear album came out last Friday.
Excellent.
And I was very happy when Richie posted on Facebook that he was digging it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yes! And so, we couldn't do it last week because, obviously, it was before release date. But we can do it this week.
We can.
So, track of the week this week, going to play you a little Primal Fear. There you go, track of the week in the mighty Primal Fear. And
they're here in May.
In May?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going.
Okay. Mm. So we were, and it was, as Richie said, damn Europeans, we were offered some interview slots. And actually, I was interviewed a whole bunch or offered a whole bunch of interview slots lately, but they've all been like 11 o'clock in the morning and stuff like that. And
during the week.
Yeah, and you know, even musicians will tell you that music doesn't pay the rent. So we all have day jobs, and you know, occasionally, like when I have the opportunity to do Shanker, it's like, okay, I'm taking a vacation day to talk to Shanker.
And I think Satriani did the same thing.
I did the same thing.
Or Joe Perry.
No, Joe Perry, I was like...
yeah, but you got out on time.
That was right after the new job. I'm like, look, I gotta, like, next week on this day, I gotta leave at this time, period. And it was like, well, why? Joe Perry. All right, that's
no,
it.
No,
say no
Joe
more.
Joe fucking Perry.
but yeah, no, I did for Satriani, too. Yeah. I took a V-Day for Satriani. But anyways, I mean, The good thing is that is Richie's been able to get this amazing rapport with a lot of artists, and I think it's a good balance where you're doing a lot of that, and I do a lot of the mixing and stuff, and it's good. I mean, it works. It works really nice, and you always deliver some great stuff, and you get it in time slots we can do.
Well, so. There's no point in me scheduling an interview if it's dead air.
Well, the bummer one is when you schedule one and then you end up that you can't make it down.
Oh.
I feel so freaking bad when those ones happen.
Oh, yeah, it's happened a few times.
Yeah,
the show must go on.
Yeah, but again, this week, thanks, buddy, for getting Sean on the show, and I think we had a great interview with him.
Yeah, well, I've got Quite Right album. I have the House of Lords album. I think I have one or two of the great White albums. I think I have the Dokken stuff, Burning Rain. I have the album, the Burning Rain album. He was on. He's on a lot of the hard rock stuff. He's a proven bass player that can sing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a hard rock band and they need a bass player that can sing, he's played with a lot of them.
Well, especially with what he does, which is a lot of. There's a lot of melodic hard rock stuff.
Well, yeah, you look at Dokken.
Yeah.
Right. When he played with Jeff Pilson was huge background vocals.
Right.
And they got Sean in, obviously, to help with, Don. And, he's done it with other bands he's played with. One of the bands he actually played with, and I was like, did he play in Queensryche? And I was thinking, oh, yeah, he must have played with Jeff Tate. And, he's played in a lot of stuff. XYZ.
Yeah.
Lynch Mob,
Yeah, I mean, an in-demand guy. And I think part of it, too, is, talking to him and, he's just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sure that pays him dividends.
Definitely.
With everyone he works with, right?
Definitely. I think when he's left bands, you've never heard any dirt.
Nope.
He's got his own career. He's got to look after his family. But, he's gone in there, he's done the job, and, he goes, maybe the acting thing might get in the way of his scheduling with the music. I don't know, but, you kind of think that it's a kind of a difficult marriage if he wants to do the acting and the music, because with the acting thing, you could be away for maybe weeks on end.
Yeah.
And a lot of these 80s bands, they kind of play weekend dates.
Yeah.
And if he can't play weekends, I don't know. It's just, you just think to yourself that it's a difficult marriage to do both.
Yeah, well,
maybe.
I mean, he's doing it.
He's doing it
really well. So it's and the other. I mean, he's I'm always like a negative bastard, but that dude is always. I mean, he just comes across as a real positive person.
Yeah, we'd never spoken to him before, and I've been wanting to speak to him for years. Like I told him in the interview, I absolutely loved the Paul Sciarrino Quite Right album.
Yeah,
I loved it when it came out, and I still love it now. And the House of Lords album I love as well, and. I've been wanting to talk to him for a long time, and just a really nice guy. We've never spoken to him before.
Yeah,
we had some technical issues.
we had a lot of technical
issues.
He was
very gracious with us. He could have just said, who are these guys?
Yeah,
not screw you, but I'm okay. It's not going to work.
Yeah,
I got to get back into studio or whatever. But no,
Well, fortunately, the technical issues weren't on our end.
Which was
good for once.
Yeah, it was. As he said, he's in a canyon, and when you're in a canyon. Phones don't work sometimes, and they didn't work sometimes.
I think it's a great interview, and I hope you guys are going to enjoy it. And definitely, this is a guy with a lot of history. So, definitely go back and do some research if you're into him.
And that album, Resurrection Kings. I'm a cynical bastard as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every couple of months, Frontiers announced this new super group.
Yeah,
and I was. Vinny, and I'm like, oh, okay, Vinny's been in a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Goldie, and I'm thinking, okay, and then it has Sean and Chaz West. Now, Chaz West, I'm not familiar with at all.
Mm-hmm.
Blew me away. Absolutely amazing singer on these. This album to me is, it sounds like Badlands, Crossing Badlands and Blue Murder is how I'd probably describe it.
I didn't think of the Blue Murder part.
Yeah.
But now that you say it, I'm like, damn, you stupid shit. Why didn't you think of the Blue Murder part? Because you're right. And you know what else was amazing about this? And I'm glad you gave me the dope slap and reminded me why we were interviewing Sean in the first place was for the Resurrection Kings is, and I tell Sean this too, but it's sonically, it's this very bright album.
It is.
It isn't even, I mean, we're coming out of that, you know, that decade of down-tuning and everything being deep. And then, you know, we have a lot of bands that are now picking up more back on the mid-range. But this is even like more upper mid-range, you know, tonality to the whole thing, to the point that for a good chunk of the songs, I would almost forget to listen to the lyrics. I was so just into the dynamics of Craig's guitar and Sean and Vinny's rhythm section.
I love Vinny's playing on
this.
And
how it all went together. And I really was forgetting to listen to lyrics. It was like almost like my brain blanked them out because just the music sounded so cool.
Mm. Yeah, I just think it's a really good album. It's an 80s hard rock melodic record.
Yeah, I mean, there's one track on there. I can't remember which track it is, but it really reminded me a lot of the song Highwire off of Voodoo Highway.
I think it's Living Loud I can't think of the name of it, but I think it's track 7.
Yeah.
I think I know the one you're talking about. But yeah, because that's where the Badlands thing came for me. I was like, oh, wow, that does sound like Badlands.
Yeah.
And of course, he took it as a huge compliment because, you know, they're a classic rock band.
Yeah. And it's a great album. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It's,
of course, it's coming out at the beginning of the year. We won't remember it.
No,
the best of next.
No, middle of February. You're like, oh, what? But yeah, there's some big albums coming out this month. You got Megadeth, is, you know,
yeah, Dystopia
just came out, and you know, what else have we got? We got Last in Line on the way.
Yeah.
Primal Fear, of course, just, you know, so straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
It's been a, you know, cracking albums coming out.
Yeah, there's a whole slew of them that are going to be dropping, which is amazing. So, and then, of course, I mean, I'm not sure when, but I know, you know, Death Angel is cranking along.
I think that's done.
So,
I think that's done.
I can't wait to hear that. That's going to be great. I mean, back down there with Sukhoff again and the other, you know, the last two they did was so freaking good.
Do you think they've lost a little bit of their experimentation because the albums sound so brutally heavy now that if you listen to their earlier stuff, there was heavy stuff on it, but it was always mixed with different
influences. What you're talking about when
it's
you look at
bludgeoning
like,
stuff now.
You look at like Act Three, there was definitely
even The Art of Dying and Killing Season, like the last two records are definitely heavier than those ones.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Andy is gone and Gus is gone, or I don't know.
I mean, yeah, definitely things got a lot heavier with like Sonic Beatdown.
Yeah.
But
no, it's not crap. I'm not saying it's crap.
No, I freaking love it.
Yeah, but it's just different. It's I don't know. It's just not samey. That's the wrong word I'm looking for. It's just like boom in your face, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, Andy was definitely a different drummer, and so I think maybe some of that experimentalism came out of Andy's, you know, part of it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know as much if it was as much Gus, but definitely Andy. If you really just listen to some of those songs, and you try to take everything out of your mind and listen to what Andy's doing on the drums, he was doing stuff that a lot of people at that point were not doing. At least in metal.
Well, you can't see Death Angel doing anything like stagnant or bored or what else? What's the other one? A Room with a View.
Yeah.
They're not going to do anything like that anymore.
Right.
Which I kind of miss, to be honest. I'm not saying the new stuff is crap. It's not. It's just I kind of miss that part of the band.
Yeah.
And I'll buy the new album and think it's great. But anyway.
I love the new stuff. Obviously, I have all the old stuff, and I loved all the old stuff, which is why I continued to listen to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it's honestly where they're at, which is fine.
Mm.
I would rather that they play what's coming out of them than be formulaic, you know?
Yeah. I just think Rob definitely took over the songwriting
in
the band. He'd done a good chunk of the songwriting in the past, but I think he is now the main guy. And his riffs are killer. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But I also think that if Mark didn't believe in what they were doing, he wouldn't be singing.
No, definitely not.
You know, I think he's just that kind of guy who's got that integrity that he'd be like, no.
Well, he already left the band. once in the 90s. So,
yeah,
you know, it's great they're back. I've seen them twice, I think, since they got back together. I saw them on the Art of Dying tour, and they played this little tiny place in Dublin. It was the first time I saw them, and they were fucking amazing. The first song they played was Thrown to the Wolves. Yeah. The fucking riff in that. Holy fuck. Just an incredible band. And then I think I saw them with, I think it was Death Angel, Testament, and Anthrax.
Uh-huh.
It was a bill for you.
There it is, yeah.
I was deaf going home after that one.
Yeah, wow. And was it Anthrax headline?
Yeah.
So you had a little bit of ear recovery.
Yeah, then. So Death Angel had like, it was in the Palladium. They had like a tiny bit of the stage, and they only had like half an hour. So it was like riff, 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 half an hour, riff, 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 trash, trash, trash. Here's another trash song. Off.
Yeah.
I think they played like Evil Priest and, oh, fuck, or Voracious Souls. Like, yeah. Holy Jesus. But yeah, great band.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They definitely are. But wow, we just went down a rabbit hole.
That's all
right,
okay.
This is classic Focus on Metal right here. But, you know, again, back to, you know, Resurrection Kings. I mean, just, yeah, just sonically, it just grabs you. It's something different.
Yeah, I'd love to see him play shows.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like, I keep going on about it all the time, and I'm sure they'd look, the guys, it's economics.
Yeah.
Simple as that. They'd probably like to play, but it's just the way the music business is now.
Yeah.
That they just record the records and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And it's a pity.
But again, you know, we get possibly another shot to see Sean with, you know, Lynch Mob does do a little bit more touring.
Yeah, they're normally one of the bands that do the weekend shows. They'd probably do all these festivals in the Midwest, and we're not living in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But I think the Lynch Mob, I think they played up here. Actually, the one time I went to see Dokken a couple of years ago, Lynch Mob played the same day.
Yeah.
About 30 miles down the street. And I was like, so do I go see Don or do I go see George? And I went to see Don with John Levin.
With
Levin, and Sean.
Yeah. And Sean, yeah.
And Jimmy DeGrasso.
I was going to mention when you were talking to him about great drummers that he played with. And I was going to mention Jimmy.
Yeah. I don't think he played with him very much, though.
Yeah.
I think it was Jimmy only played a couple of dates with Dokken. And I think Jimmy even said himself when we spoke to him a while back, it was like, put on your headphones, learn the 15 songs and get up and play, which he can do.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He's a fantastic drummer.
Yeah.
But, cool. Yeah.
So, all right. So what do you say we roll a little conversation with the one and only Sean McNabb?
Sure. Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Richie from Focus on Metal. How are you?
Hey, Richie. All right, hold on. Let me get out of the headphones here. Hold on 1 second.
No problem.
How's it going? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, perfect. I'm here with my co-host, Scott.
Hi, Scott. What's happening?
Not much at all. How are we doing?
I'm good. I'm just sitting here rehearsing some Lynch Mob tracks that we're cutting in the studio right now for a new record.
Very nice. Oh, you gotta keep George happy. Practice, practice.
That's right. Just trying to keep up with him, you know?
There you go.
Yeah, when you hit me up saying you were... You were doing a new Lynch Mob record. I said to myself, he only released one a few months ago, and he's already in doing another one.
Yeah, this one's actually really cool because Jimmy DeHenna and I wrote the record together as a band, and you know, that doesn't happen that much anymore. So,
Sean, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. You just broke off there for a minute.
I'm wondering if. I should either call you guys back on my landline, or
okay.
That'd probably be better because I'm in a canyon and I lose calls sometimes.
Okay.
So give me the number you're at, or I can give you my home number.
Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's better.
Hi.
So you're working on the Lynch Mob record, the new one with Jimmy Dand on drums.
Yes, absolutely, and. You know, like I said, we wrote the record together, the band, the four of us, and we've got a year under our belts this time. What's really cool is, you know, not that many bands record, write and record together anymore, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's nice to have a band vibe on this record and everything. And this lineup was actually together in early 2000. We did a tour together. Did a summer, and you know, few of us were still out of our minds, me being one of them at that time. So it's much better this time around. And we got a really great chemistry going right now. And, you know, a lot of respect for one another. So it's a really good situation right now.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I used to love Jimmy playing in the Bullet Boys. I thought he was an amazing drummer.
Oh, he really is, man. He's one of the best out there, in my opinion. And, you know, as a bass, when the drums are good, he's one of those guys. He's got a really good swing about him and a great pocket and a great guy.
Yeah, so when do you think we're going to get the Lynch Mob album out there to listeners?
You know, we're not sure. We're trying to get it done. We've got everything written. The guitars and the drums are done. We're doing some editing, you know, shortening some of the tracks a little bit. But I'm about halfway through the record with the bass. And Oni's getting started on Friday on a couple of things with Jeff Pilsen. So, you know, I'm not sure when we'll see it, but it's going to be good when it's ready.
Yeah. you got Jeff producing it then, Jeff Pilsen?
I'm not sure. I know he's going to produce the vocals. I'm not sure what's happening. I know that Chris Collier is going to mix it, who's fantastic and has done several Lynch Mob records and Korn and some other, a lot of people actually. So we're excited to have him mixing it. I know that Jeff is going to produce some of it. I'm not sure about the whole thing, but because he's pretty busy with Foreigner, but we'll see how that goes. And we're happy to have him.
Oh, yeah. Jeff's definitely a wicked nice guy. We've had the opportunity to sit down with him before, and yeah, anytime you can spend some time with Jeff, it's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, he's a good dude, and you know, he's been working so hard with Foreigner, and he's finally got a little break, so we're happy to have him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to ask you up front, Sean, of course, Lemmy passed away recently. Was he an influence at all on your bass playing?
You know, I think he was an influence on anybody who ever played rock and roll. The guy was just, you know, such a, just kind of a pioneer of, and rebel of rock and roll. It's just, he stood for everything in rock and roll is about, you know, and defiance and that whole rebel thing, perseverance, you know, I mean, I think that guy was, just one of the coolest guys too that I ever met. And I've got a couple of cool stories, but I went to his birthday party, about 3 weeks or month. It was in December. And at the Whiskey, and some friends of mine played, and, you know, it was really cool just to be a part of his birthday party. And, man, he just, you know, he was gone so soon after that. I'm really glad that I was there and got to be a part of that.
Yeah, did you ever tour with him before?
You know, we never did get to tour with Motorhead. I know all those guys. I know Lemmy, knew Lemmy, and Mickey D, you know, is a good friend of mine, and I got to hang out with Phil a little bit. We never did get to tour with Motorhead.
Yeah.
We might have played on a couple of bills here and there, like in Europe, with those guys, but we never got to do a full tour with them, no.
Yeah, and of course, the other legend that passed away was David Bowie. Was he an influence on you at all when you listened to music when you were younger?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that guy was just such an innovator in so many different things, you know, musically. I mean, the fashion thing. I still, one of my favorite records was the one he had Stevie Ray Vaughan on. I love the early stuff, and that's amazing. But that the whole Let's Dance thing and everything was just really, really cool with Stevie Ray Vaughan, and that was one of my favorites. But you know, of course, the early stuff was absolutely amazing. It's crazy, you know, because we're living in a time where we're going to see some real, real legendary cats, unfortunately, go, you know, and
yeah,
it's just what happens, you know, when you get older. But I was talking about that the other day with a friend that, you know, we're going to see some of the greatest legends and heavy hitters go in our time, you know, and it's unfortunate, but it's the cycle of life, and they left us with a lot of, you know, great music.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber to Classic Rock magazine, and the obituary section gets bigger in it every month.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, it's, you know, just tough.
Yeah, the older we get, I think the more of that we're going to see, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah. So anyway, we're here to you know, talk about the new Resurrection Kings album.
Oh, okay.
And I've had it about a week or two now, and I think it's
you
a
got
great
the whole record.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's an excellent album, but I just want to start by saying, like, how and when did you become a part of the project?
Well, let's see what happened. I've done a few records for Frontiers with Burning Rain and a few other things that I've played on, and they just approached me, probably a few years ago now, and see if I wanted to be a part of that thing. And I never got to work with Craig, and I really wanted to work with Craig on a project. We've jammed together a lot, but we never got to really do a project. And, you know, I've known him since I got in Quiet Riot, you know, early on in the in my career. In, you know, like 86, 87, he was in Dio, I was in Quiet Riot. Actually, the first gig I ever did with Quiet Riot, Craig Goldie was on guitar with Ronnie James Dio in Japan. It's called Japan Aid 2, I think. And so I always admired his guitar playing. And, you know, when I found out he was, you know, a big part of this thing, I really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And it started out, Frankie Vannelli was playing drums. He had cut the drums. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure, but he backed out of the project, and everything was getting close to being done. And then we got Vinny in there as another dear friend, and, you know, one of the great drummers, you know, of the world as well. And so that was pretty exciting. He cut the drums after we had cut most of the tracks. So he went back over and played the drums.
Wow, that's very un-Vinny-like.
Yeah, right, it's normally the other way around.
Well, he's so good, you know, he can hang. Both those guys are fantastic drummers, you know. So it was interesting. I actually cut my tracks to Frank, and then Vinny came in and redid them for. I don't know what the politics of all that was, but. You know, it worked out the way that it worked out, and you know, Vinny's fantastic, and
yeah,
so it was really cool.
Yeah, one thing that really jumped out at me listening to it is that it's a really bright sounding album.
I noticed that last night too. I heard that Path of Love song on YouTube just in my headphones and the phone.
Yeah,
and it did sound really great, and really it is bright for sure. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
But I got to say, Craig's guitar work on this thing is just out of control, man.
Yeah.
He's on another planet good, you know, and it really shows on this record.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the name Resurrection Kings came from John Levin, who's one of my favorite guitar players who I was in Dokken with for many years, and another incredible guitar player. We were going to start a band, Mick, John and myself, Mick Brown and John and myself, called Resurrection Kings, you know, as a side project to Dokken, which we were doing. And, you know, nothing really ever happened with the name, and we were, Craig and going around, what can we call this thing? And they had another name, and nobody really liked it. And I go, hey, you know, what about this name? And everybody's ears perked up on Resurrection Kings. And I go, well, let me call John Levin and see if he'll let us have it. And, you know,
he's a lawyer.
John's a lawyer, so you don't want to mess with him, you know. But he was kind enough. He goes, let me think about it. And he called me back a couple days later, and he goes, it's all yours, man. I'm not going to do anything with it. So he gave us the name, and it was really, really nice of him. And I think it's a good name for the band.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's cool. And you know, the fans, I think, are going to be stoked with this record. It's really, for people that like that genre of music, I think it's really going to be something special for them.
Yeah. Now Frontiers, they've gotten these musicians together. When you go into it, is there anything in the back of your mind that it's kind of a leap of faith for you, that you don't know if it's going to work or not? Or do you look at the guys and you know them and say, look, this is going to be awesome anyway?
Yeah, I kind of knew it was going to be awesome. I heard the demos and I thought, you know, the songs are good and they're there. You know, it's a little bit 80s, but I know that we'll put our own spin on the songs. And I got to say, Alessandro Delvecchio, that he did a great job on taking everybody's tracks that were recorded in different places in the, you know, the country, and everybody, it was like all these different studios. He took those tracks and really made it work and mixed it really well. And I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with his production on the record. And initially it was him singing the songs. So on the demos, you know, he sang all the, a lot of the vocal lines and things. You know, of course, Chaz came in and made it his own, but he's a hell of a singer too.
Oh, he's amazing.
So, yeah, we were impressed with Alessandro's voice as well. But I think, you know, this thing is grown into something that's pretty special. And we're hoping we can get out and play some shows with it. There's talk that we may go to Brazil in June, but nothing's set in stone yet. But there's been a few offers. Mm. So that could be the start of us maybe possibly doing some live shows, you know.
Yeah. Now, Sean, when you get sent the tracks in the beginning, are there any guidelines on what to play? Or did it mostly leave it up to you?
Oh, no. He said, I just want you to do what you do on them. And, you know, there were some scratches on there, but I really didn't pay much attention to that. I kind of, you know, I just go by instinct and what feels right. And I basically just sat in a studio I like over in the Valley for a week. Afternoons for a week. The studio is called Pawn Shop Studios in Van Nuys, and I just sat in there with my engineer and tried to come up with the best possible parts that grooved and made this thing rock. And I feel like we got a pretty good tone. The bass tone on that record's pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah,
that was the first thing, you know, when I first got on and I'm listening to Distant Prayer, and I'm like, wow, this is, you know, it's bright. It's a different tonality. And then the next thing was like, all right, how's Sean's bass going to fit in with this? And I was really surprised at how well he was, you know, you guys were able to do that. Because I would think that, you know, being a former bass player myself, I would find myself in that range, like really challenged with what I played. But what you did in there, it just really nailed it. And it was really exciting to hear it. And also the fact that you were able to do it. And like you said, make it groove. Like some of these songs even have that groove like, you know, like Badlands had on the Voodoo Highway album. It's really got that really good vibe that, that you just, you know, you, your body starts moving and stuff. And a lot of that's really the bass and drums.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that reference. And I loved Ray Gillen, you know, and that record. And, you know, God rest his soul. He was something special. Every once in a while, Oni Logan reminds me of Ray Gillen.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, it, that's our job is to go in and make things groove. And, you know, and then you get like Vinny Appice, who's like one of the best drummers in the world. And that I can't take all the credit for the groove because that guy is the groove master. You know, he always puts something special in there where you're like, wow, that's completely friggin' cool. I would have never expected that, but that's just his thing. You know, he knows how to make it work. And you know, we did our job. If you think it's grooving, then, we did our job. You know, I went old school with it. I used my old standby Spectre, which is number 385 on every record I've ever done. And we used, an old vintage SVT and an 810 cabinet. And most of the, I'm using a pick on a lot more songs these days just for that tone, you know?
Yeah.
Do you find that tough to switch up like that? Like whenever I play bass, I it's weird. I can play guitar all day with a pick. I pick up a bass and like all of a sudden my fingers don't know what to do with a pick on a bass.
Well, you know, it took me a long time, you know, because being a finger player, it took me, there was a long time where I couldn't do that. You know, I didn't have the right hand pick technique. And if, you know, some people say, you know, yeah, playing with a pick, it's easier. That's not true. It takes a long time to develop a right hand pick hand. But I feel like you got to do both if you want to be well rounded. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't want to play any blues or funk with a pick or anything, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want to be well rounded, I think you got to do it all. But I'm really kind of digging the tone and, you know, with the Dean Markley strings, the blue steel strings and the pick, it's a pretty badass tone. I'm really kind of digging it. I'm using a lot on the Lynch Mob. But there's all those finger songs, which I approach it like this. I get in there, I go, I can tell this is a pick song or this is a finger song right off the bat. And if something isn't working, it's usually because I don't have that right. You know, oh, that's because this is a finger song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get that out pretty quick. But, yeah, you know, I think I'm real happy with the tone I got on the record. And like I said, everybody just played their asses off on them.
Nice.
Yeah, the other song I like, Sean, is Falling for You.
You know, I don't even know if I've heard three songs, you guys. I'm serious. I've got two videos, another video for the Living Out song that's going to come out.
Sean, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, yeah. He just went out there for a minute.
Yeah, the first video that we had, did you see that?
Yeah, I've seen the video. I've seen the singles, and then we got sent the record.
Oh, okay. So you've heard things that I don't even know, you know, what they sound like.
Oh, man, that's not right.
That's not right.
But everything I've hooked with, you know, I think it sounds good. So I wouldn't know what Path of Love sounds like yet.
So I have to ask you, what's your definition of success for an album like this?
Success for me is if the fans that buy it like it, you know, and that's all it is I want to make people happy with the records that we do. You know, nobody's selling a lot of records anymore. I think our music still has a cult following. Anyway, like I said, I just hope that the fans that bought it like it, and if they do, then we did our job, you know?
Yeah.
I got to give it up to Serafino and Frontiers because, you know, they're keeping this music alive and signing bands like us and you know, doing a great job with it. So pretty happy that they continue to put out this music, you know?
Yeah. No, I know you're doing the acting as well now. When did you get the acting bug?
Oh, you know, I was I started out as a childhood actor doing theater and a lot of grew up in drama classes and all that stuff. So I was doing that very early on, a lot of plays and everything. And then, you know, when rock and roll took over in my teens and stuff, I got away from it for a while. And, you know, rock and roll, I was out playing rock and touring and stuff, so it wasn't that much time to do it. But I got back into it when I got sober. I decided, you know, there's still some things that I was passionate about doing that I never got to pursue like I wanted to. So I've been back into it I've been sober 11 years now. I was back into it about 12 years, 13 years now.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's been great, you know. There's a lot of parallels between being on stage, playing music, and acting and things. It's very similar at times and completely different at times, but, you know, when you're in it, it's just like playing a great show. You know, the goosebumps stand up on your arms, you're totally connected, and it's just another creative form, you know, of creativity.
Yeah, now which one is easier to earn a living in?
Well, you know, I'm blessed because, you know, I'm lucky enough to get to go out and make enough money to get by playing music, and you know, the acting thing is really tough to make a living, you know, unless you're on a hit show or something. You know, I do a lot of indie films and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and you have to, I don't think if you want to be an actor, you're going to have to work some other kind of job, you know, like a lot of them are waiters or this or that, you know, or whatever. So I'm lucky enough that my other job is music, you know, and I love doing them both, you know, equally. I don't think I could live without one or the other, but as far as making a living solely from being an actor, there's a very, very small percentage that get to do that.
Yeah. Now, I do want to ask you about an album that your very first album, I think you might have been on, I absolutely love, is the Quite Right album with Paul Sciartino.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are your memories of recording that?
That was my first record, first real record on a real record label, and
lots of gigs, diamonds.
Yeah, Sean, you broke up there. I didn't hear a word you said. Sorry.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, that's better.
Okay.
I'm going to stand in this spot.
Okay, so first Quiet Riot record.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just a kid. And Frankie Benelli gave me that job and believed in me as a young man. And he goes, this will be the easiest record you ever cut. And he was right. You know, we cut a lot of it live at Pasha Studios in Hollywood, and Spencer Proffert, you know, produced the record. And you know, like I said, I was just a kid, and it was a great experience, and it actually opened the door for me for my career out here in Los Angeles playing rock and roll.
Yeah. Now, what's the biggest lesson you learned from Spencer?
From Spencer?
Yeah.
Spencer, let's see, what did I learn from Spencer? He was a real vibe producer. You know, he wasn't big on the technical stuff, but he was all about capturing the vibe of what we were doing, and I think he did a good job of that. You know, some producers are more to the technical side, but he was about turning the lights on, down and lighting a little incense and getting the vibe going on, or, you know, we might even have been firing up a little pot or something back then, you know, and just getting into the vibe. He was real big on that. So I thought that was kind of a cool producer to work with. It was just all about vibe, and he had a great engineer that got the sounds, but he was all about getting everybody in the zone and getting the vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that does definitely help. I had a guitarist I used to play with that, I mean, fantastic, that this guy would, you know, do runs and people's jaws would drop. But when you went in the studio, it was definitely, he was the guy that you had to turn all the studio lights off and let him lay flat on the floor and, like, make everything nice and quiet, and then he would just do amazing shit. But if you had him stand up and do it, forget it. Like, if you broke his vibe, you were done for the day. So it's cool when you get that producer that understands that stuff.
Exactly. You know, and the studio is an interesting thing. It's, you know, sometimes it's your best friend. Sometimes it's your worst enemy. You know, it just depends on the day. I mean, I'd like to think you get better the more you do it and the more comfortable you are. But you're under the ultimate microscope, you know, sometimes. And, you know, the littlest thing can be, you know, can just, you know, it can devastate certain things, you know, and when you're younger, you know, you find out that you're just under a microscope, and you know, you got to get the vibe, like I said, but at the same time, you know, you don't want it to be so perfect that it has no vibe.
That's right.
You know, it's a fine line, you know, recording, but you know, at the end of the day, every time you do it, you get better at it and comfortable. And, you know, it takes a while.
Yeah.
To learn how to record.
Yeah. No, of course, one of the things up on YouTube is one of the Japanese concerts you did on that tour. Now, I'm always fascinated with musicians that go over there, that they receive all these gifts from the fans. Did you get anything like that when you went over?
Oh, always. You know, they've always been fantastic. And they're big on gifts, and they are always giving us very nice and gracious gifts and appreciative. And I think the last time I was over there was with Dokken for Loud Park. And,
it's been several years now, but I look forward to going there the next time because they're just, they're so into it. Mm. And, you know, it, we used to go there all the time. You know, a lot of the bands would always go to Japan, but now, you know, it's just once in a while. And I'm hoping we can get Lynch Mob over there at some point in the future as well. Maybe Resurrection Kings, that'd be fantastic. But yeah, they've always been good to our genre of music and just really supported us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one, just a couple of quick questions before I let you go, Sean. One of the things, and I was looking at your the discography that you've played on, you've replaced Chuck Wright twice in two different bands. And
probably more than that.
Yeah, and I was wondering, that has anyone, any fan ever come up to you thinking you were somebody else?
Oh, of course. Of course, yes. I've gotten mistaken as Chuck. Chuck and I are the best of friends, you know. In the early days, it was a little weird, you know, being, because I replaced him in Quiet Riot and in House of Lords at one point. But, yeah. You know, we've become the best of friends, and I have the ultimate respect for him. He's one of my favorite players. He's just always been really solid and a great, great guy. You know, he runs the Wednesday Night Jam. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, the Lucky Strike Live.
That was my last question.
Yeah, he's really doing a great job with that, and they've been really successful. And I've jammed there on many occasions.
Well,
wasn't
that the place that David Lee Roth's band was supposed to reunite and it got shut down?
Yeah, and they were all to play, and it was just too packed, and the fire marshal shut it down. I was there that night. But,
damn it.
You know, it's been a great place for, you know, a lot of us L.A. guys to jam together and, you know, just be a musical community together. The last time I was there, I jammed with Robin Zander and Dax Nielsen, you know, the night they found out they were getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they came. And it was funny because they did Dream Police, and Chuck comes to me and he goes, "Hey, if Robin wants to do another song, do you know Surrender?" And I go, "Yeah, I know it." And sure enough, you know, it was just at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
So I got to play with Robin again. You know, just cool stuff like that happens, you know. Where do you get to see that kind of thing, you know, just impromptu?
Yeah. Now do you know who's turning up when they ask you, or do you just turn up and then, you know, or you know what I mean? Do you know who's going to be there, or do you just go and then you're like, wow?
No. Well, we didn't know. I didn't know that Robin was going to turn up. So usually you do know what you're going to do and who you're going to play with. And Chuck does a really great job in organizing that and making sure everybody's on the same page and what songs they're going to do and what time. And he actually runs it very, very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I never have to say, for crying out loud, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah, so...
I love your accent, by the way. When I get an Irish part, I'm calling you up and picking your brain, man.
I've often scheduled interviews, and the first thing they'd say like was like, I didn't expect an Irish guy to be on the other end of the phone.
I love it, man. It's a beautiful accent.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, man.
But the other thing I want to ask about is that why did it take so long for you to release some solo material? I know you released some of it in 2015.
You know, kind of a confidence. I've been in so many other bands. I wrote those songs for a movie that I did called Rock Story. Eric Roberts and Joyce DeWitt are in the movie, and Gilbert Godfrey and some other cool people. I had a great part in the movie, and they asked me to write a couple of songs. So I wrote a couple of tunes, and they came out pretty well. And I just decided, hey, you know, why not now? You know, they didn't want anything too heavy, you know, so they're kind of a little on the poppier side, and that's what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And it came out pretty well, and I thought, you know, why not? I don't have anything out there as a solo artist, you know, and I just thought it was the right time. We made a couple of videos. I really liked the first video that we made. Second one was okay. We learned a lot with the green screen and, you know, in
post, but you know, it was something that I wanted to do. I feel like I can sing, and I had nothing out there with just me, you know, singing. So it's actually cool to have a tool out there. Like if I go in for an audition, they go, oh, by the way, this guy plays guitar and sings.
Yeah.
And I just go, hey, here's this link in my video, you know, and it's kind of like a little, at a moment's notice, you know, you can just send over a link and somebody's like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So, Sean, I'm going to put you on the spot for my final question.
Okay.
Your favorite album that you played on in the past?
Oh, man, I can't.
And the phone goes dead.
Is it dead?
It's okay now.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm checking phones. You know what? I can't. Somebody showed me my discography the other day, and it was a lot of records, and I was like, holy shit, there's my life, you know, right there. And I can't pick a favorite. You know, there's all been things about them. Some of the Great White records I made, you know, during my time in Great White, I was real proud of. I'm proud of them all. For me, it's the one I'm doing right now,
which yeah.
is the new Lynch Mob record, and that's the way I have to look at it. You know, I try to do the best you can at the time and better each one as you go. And, you know, I'll be over at Jimmy's later tonight cutting another track. So I would have to say it's the new Lynch Mob record right now.
Yeah, I love the House of Lords records you played on.
Oh, thank you.
Demons Down.
I got to work with Tommy Aldridge on that. We became good friends, and that was a great experience for me.
Yeah, you've worked with some amazing drummers. Tommy Mick Brown, Jimmy Now. You've worked with Frankie Benali.
Carmine Appice, Vinny.
Carmine.
Yeah, I've been really blessed. You
know? Yeah.
For sure. Audie Desbro.
Yeah, some great frontmen, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I've been really, really lucky to work with a lot of great musicians. I've just been completely blessed like that. And hey, you know, if we're anywhere close out there, I want you guys to come and be my guests at a show. You know, if Lynch Mob's there or whoever.
Awesome.
You
know, awesome.
Love to have you guys come out and meet you in person and be my guests. Okay.
Fantastic. Great.
Thanks so much, Sean. And yeah, anytime you guys are in the Boston area, we're definitely looking forward to come out and hear some live music.
Okay, man. You guys come out and be my guest. Thank you so much for wanting to interview me, and it's a real pleasure.
No Thanks, problem, Sean. All right. Have a good rest of good night.
Good, good right, recording guys. Tonight, all right?
All right.
Yeah. All right, brothers. All right.
That will do it for another week here on Focus on Metal. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And again, big thanks to Richie for making that one happen. And I don't know what the hell we're doing next week, but...
I have no idea. Little Mountain?
I don't know. It's probably going to be another Little Mountain episode. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to decide who to do.
And so that's probably what it'll be, is another episode of our Little Mountain Sound Project, unless something else drops into our lap that's
big
back, and major.
We're back to a behind-the-scenes guy. So we've three of them left. Yeah, we did,
right.
James,
we did James Kotak.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've either got...
Could be Mike Frazier.
Well, Mike, we had two interviews with Mike. I did one of them.
Yeah, so... maybe it'll be a Little Mountain Sound Project one, but either way, I'm sure that it'll be something that everybody will get into.
Yeah, and we've other interviews in the works, so.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah, so lots of good stuff on the way, and again, thanks to Sean McNabb for taking so much time to talk to us.
Ah, hold on. The other record I forgot to mention that's coming out is the Dream Theater record, the concept album. Was it Illumination? No. Hell is the name of it? I think it's... Anyway. Well, I must be really looking forward to it. I can't remember the name of it. But yeah, it's a typical Dream Theater concept album. And they are touring and playing all of it. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
What a bold move.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, they get a fan base that'll be like, all right.
They can get away with it. Because they're not going to get radio airplay anyway.
Yeah. No, they'll definitely have a fan base that will do that. And unlike... you know, like when Maiden went out and tried to do all, like almost all new stuff off of new releases, and everyone was like, oh, what the? That Dream Theater's got like a different fan base. That it's more that, you know, that Muso thing of, yeah, they're going to play the whole thing. Yeah, we're going to be there.
And they normally play for 3 hours so they can play an hour of other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you don't typically the typical Dream Theater person going to a show isn't going there for the Dream Theater hits.
Doing the album.
Because it's one.
Yeah, pull me under.
You know, and that's, and if you're a real hardcore Dream Theater fan, when you look at that song, you're like, eh, all right.
I don't even, you know that album? I haven't listened to that album in years. Yeah. It sounds really, David Prater produced it. It just sounds really dated, the production. Uh-huh. It's too clean. It's, I don't know. It's got some good songs on it, but you listen to that, and then you listen to what they're doing now, and the stuff they're doing now is light years ahead of that stuff. Like, it's like two different bands.
Kind of is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Kevin Moore is gone and Mike Portnoy is gone, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, again, you can keep up with us at focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You can catch up with Richie at Facebook, and you can also keep track of me on Twitter. So, until next week, have yourselves a good metal week, and until we talk to you again, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.